We're in Deuteronomy chapter number 7, and we're going to start at verse number 6. God has just told the Israelites through Moses, this is Moses' final address to the Israeli people before they go into the Promised Land in a few more months, that when they get into the Promised Land, they are to be exclusively devoted to God, no other gods and goddesses whatsoever. They're not to let their kids intermarry with the people of the land, because those people living in the Promised Land right now are pagans. They believe in other gods and goddesses, and that would compromise the Israelis' devotion to God. They are to eradicate every single pagan worship site that they come across as they start occupying the Promised Land, because no Israeli should take any interest whatsoever in worshiping another god or goddess. Only God should matter. And so the reason for that, which is what we closed on last session, is this, Deuteronomy 7:6, "For you are a people holy to He who is your God." Holy in this context means completely devoted to, specifically and exclusively devoted to. So God is the only one that Israelis worship. And so nothing else is going to be allowed to come into that equation. "He who is your God has chosen you to be a people for His treasured possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth." Now, I've been teaching you the Hebrew word here is the best I can pronounce it, segula. Segula. It means the thing you value the most. I like to say, if your house is on fire and you can only grab one thing out of it, that is your segula. That's the thing you put the most value on. Well, that's the way that the Israeli people are for God. He values them the most out of all the people on planet Earth at this time. And the reason for it is because they're all descended from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob that God developed personal relationships with. That's important. Verse 7, "It was not because you were more in number than any other people that He who has set His love on you and chose you, for you were the fewest of all peoples." You know, if you go back to the very beginning, it was Abraham. Abraham and Sarah, a couple, just two. That's when God chose this family line. And it didn't increase too much when it started including Isaac and Rebekah. It really didn't start gaining any numerical advances until we end up with Jacob and Leah and Rachel and their two maids and 12 kids, 12 boys, and one named girl. So God says, you weren't chosen to be my segula because there were tons of you. No. But, verse 8, "It was because He who is loves you and is keeping the oath that He swore to your fathers, that He who is has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt." It's because God is committed to you. The word love here is not an emotional word. It has some emotional overtones to it, I suppose. But it's mostly the idea of commitment. And so God is committed to keeping the promise that He made to Abraham. "In your seed, Abraham, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed." That's the most significant statement of God's commitment to Abraham. And Paul actually addresses the wording when he's writing Galatians chapter 3 and says that seed, singular, is all about Jesus. It's all about the Messiah who will come and be the mechanism by which everybody, regardless of their ethnicity, can have a mechanism of salvation, a mechanism of coming under the love of God. But for the purposes of the Israelites that Moses is addressing here, they needed to be reminded, you are the beloved of God because of your great, 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 many times great grandfather. That's how you got out of Egypt, because of promises made and promises kept. Verse number 9. Know therefore that he who is your God is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. I think this is like the third or fourth time that God has introduced himself or reintroduced himself along these lines, that he is the God who loves those that are in commitment to him, in covenant relationship with him. And he keeps that love going perpetually in those lines of commitment. But we also have the judgment side, the justice side. Verse 10, and repays to their face, meaning makes it clear why it's happening. Repays to their face those who hate him. So hate is the opposite of love. And so I've tried to teach you that love is all about commitment. So hate is about non-commitment. So he repays to their face those who are not committed to him by destroying them. He will not be slack with one who hates him. He will repay him to his face. So God is dealing out justice against the Canaanites. They have had many hundreds of years of opportunity to repent, and instead they've become more and more sinful. And so the time of judgment has arrived for the Canaanites, and the Israelites are going to be used by God as a mechanism or as a tool in meting out that justice. But the warning is always there. That is, if you throw the covenant off, if you blow off this relationship, you also will come under such a judgment in the future. So verse 11 says, you shall therefore be careful to do the commandment and the statutes and the rules that I command to you today. And because you listen to these rules and keep and do them, he who is your God will keep with you the covenant and the chesed, the steadfast love, which is, that's more of the emotional word. God likes us. He wants what's best for us, right? He will keep with you the covenant and the steadfast love that he swore to your fathers. He will love you, bless you, and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb. So that's your kids, your grandkids. And the fruit of your ground, your grain, your wine, your oil, the increase of your herds and the young of your flock in the land that he swore to your fathers to give you. So that's your material prosperity. So God is promising both ethnic, that is your family line, and material prosperity if you will just live according to the covenant. That's what he's telling the Israeli people. It is a it's an arrangement. It is a bargain. It is a deal that he is offering to them. You shall be blessed above all peoples. So all the other ethnic groups are going to be less blessed because they're not in the same relationship with God. Listen to some of the specifics here. This is the ideal. The reality, unfortunately, is impacted by the failure of the generations of Israel after this that don't keep the covenant. There shall not be male or female barren among you or among your livestock. So you're not going to have a problem with having kids or your animals having babies. He who is will take away from you all the sickness and none of the evil diseases of Egypt, which you knew, will he afflict on you, but he will lay them all those who hate you. So they're going to be healthy, while those that are their enemies are going to end up being under the judgment of God and have some of these same plagues. Verse 16, he shall consume all the peoples, you shall consume all the peoples that he who is your God will give over to you. Your eye shall not pity them, neither shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. So this is the reminder that when you go into the land, you don't make deals with the Canaanites. They are on God's hit list. So you follow through with what God directs you in accordance with it. You don't make deals with them. You don't intermarry with them. And anything that they've been using for worship, you destroy. Because if you don't do that, it's going to be an opportunity for you to engage in sin. It'll become, the Greek word is scandalon. Scandalon is the little trigger on any type of trap. I always like to use the mouse trap because most people recognize that right off the bat. That little thing that you put the bait on, and then you use it to kind of set the bar in place, that's the scandalon on the trap. And so it's what gets you in trouble. If the Israelis leave pagan people and pagan things in place, they will be a trap opportunity for themselves and for those that follow. Verse 17, if you say in your heart, oh, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? So that's kind of what happened, 38 and a half years earlier, whenever they got the 10 bad spy reports and rebelled against going into the promised land. God says, you shall not be afraid of them, for you shall remember what he who is your God did to Pharaoh and all Egypt. The great trials that your eyes saw, the signs and the wonders, the mighty hand, the outstretched arm by which he who is your God brought you out. This is particularly directed toward the eldest people that Moses is talking to. Remember those that are in their 50s, maybe their upper 40s. They were the teenagers, the kids during the Exodus. They most certainly would have carried with them a very, very distinct memory of all those plagues that punished the Egyptians for worshiping other gods and goddesses. And so Moses says, if you start worrying about the Canaanites, those sinners in the land, being more numerous than you, more powerful than you, start thinking about what God did to the Egyptians. Remember that. And it's not just that. Verse 20, moreover, he who is your God will send hornets among them until those who are left and hide themselves from you are destroyed. God's original intent was to basically use the Israelis for mop-up. God was going to really put the pressure supernaturally on all the Canaanites. And the Israelis only just had to basically deal with the most stubborn people that tried to stick around. And so the hornets mentioned here, God apparently was going to do something similar that he did in Egypt, using bugs to chase the Canaanites out of the promised land. And then the Israelis would mop up those that stayed. Verse number 21, you shall not be in dread of them, for he who is your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. And the moment we hear that, we should think as an Israeli would of God's presence right there over the Holy of Holies of the tabernacle, the glowing cloud by day, the brilliant fiery cloud by night, just going up into the sky and maybe coming out into like an umbrella over the top of the encampment. That was God's presence. He's with them. And so if they're going to be scared of what God's asking them to do, all they need to do is look there. God is with them right now. He'll take care of it. Verse 22, he who is your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You shall not make an end of them at once, lest the wild beasts grow too numerous for you. So the original intention was, and we'll see this actually in the operations of Joshua. They'll go in and they'll do a sweep through the core of Canaan. And they'll deal with all the major cities and chase the Canaanites out of those regions, destroy their big cities. And then the Israelis will divide up the property that they have cleared out in the inheritance by lot that will happen. But God will then, in subsequent periods of time, as Israel grows in number, chase other sections clear of Canaanites. And the Israelis will move into those. Because you don't want to just clear out everything and then the Israelis only live in a small portion of it, because the wild animals will super multiply in those empty areas. So God says, don't worry, we're going to do it a little by little. That's the plan. Verse 25. Verse 24. He will give their kings into your hand, and you shall make their name perish from under the earth, which is a euphemism for you will execute them. No one shall be able to stand against you until you have destroyed them. The carved images of their gods you shall burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or the gold that is on them, or take it for yourselves, lest you be ensnared by it, for it is an abomination to he who is your God. The gods and goddesses, a lot of them are going to be made of precious metals. And they are not to be looking at that as an object of value. They should instead look at it as an object of worship that needs to be destroyed. Don't worry about its value. Verse 26, and you shall not bring an abominable thing into your house and become devoted to destruction like it. You shall utterly detest and abhor it, for it is devoted to destruction. So any thought of adopting one of these abandoned gods or goddesses, the idols, bringing it into your house as an Israeli, no, don't even think about it. That'd be a bad idea. And unfortunately, the Israelis will not only think about doing it, some of them will actually do it. We've talked about this before. In the ancient world, gods and goddesses were thought of as being regional or local in their power. And so if you had an idol, say an idol of Baal, that you picked up at, at Jerusalem. So his power base, that god or goddess, in your mind, was centered out of that region where that idol was originally located. So if you happen to be amongst those that, you know, had a property given to you near that same site, you might be tempted to believe that you now had control of a god that was powerful in that region. And so you'd be tempted to keep that image for that very purpose. And so God, through Moses, is trying to say, don't think like that. These things are objects of worship that need to be eradicated completely. Chapter 8. The whole commandment that I command you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land that he who is swore to give to your fathers. You shall remember the whole way that he who is your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So the wilderness experience was also a testing time. Now, not testing in order to see failure, but testing in order to see resistance and success. The word testing in a lot of our Bible contexts had the idea of putting something under heat or under some sort of stress to verify that it was real. For example, in the ancient world, particularly closer to the New Testament than the Old Testament, counterfeiting happened. People would take slugs of cheap coinage, maybe copper, maybe even lead, and then they would coat it with a very thin veneer of gold or silver, and then they'd try to pass it off as a much more valuable coin. And so the way you tested that coin is you grabbed your knife and you sliced down through the top layer to see if that gold or that silver went all the way down. So that was called testing. It was to verify that it was real. When you wanted to make pure gold or pure silver, you put it under high heat to get any slag off of it, to make sure that what was left was real. And so that's kind of what was happening in the wilderness experience. God was putting the Israelis to test, putting pressure on them. The word humble here has the idea of pushing pressure down on someone. Was to verify that the generation that was going to go into the promised land was real in their commitment to God. Will you or will you not do as God told you to do? Now, verse 3 gets quoted by Jesus in his temptation period in front of Satan because it was applicable to how Satan was testing him, tempting him. And Satan, when he tempts people, he tempts them to try to break them, to prove that they aren't real, that they aren't fully committed to God. And so after Jesus has gone 40 days without any food, he's hungry, of course, very weak. I mean, his body is starting to eat up all of its muscle reserves because it's already burned up all the fat reserves. And so he is tempted by Satan to just turn stones into bread and start munching on them, right? And verse number 3, this is where Jesus quotes from. He humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know. So God put them out in the middle of nowhere where they didn't have regular supplies of food so that they would run out of supplies and would be hungry. And then God provided the what's it, the manna, the what is this, to feed them. Why? He did this so that you might know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So it's not the daily bread that God was providing that was the main point. That was, yes, very helpful. It was very pragmatic for the Israeli people. But the bigger lesson was trusting God. not just simply in providing daily bread, which that becomes part of the Lord's Prayer in the New Testament, give us this day our daily bread. It is, tell us what to do day by day and we'll do it. That's what we're supposed to learn from that. That's what the Israelis were supposed to learn from this. Verse number 4, your clothing didn't wear out on you. Your foot did not swell these 40 years. So God was providing, even for the rebel generation, everything they needed to have a decent life. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, he who is your God disciplines you. Discipline is not just simply about punishment. Sometimes the word does get used for punishment. Discipline is the idea of training, pushing people to their limits so that they know they can do it. Having people learn how to do things the right way, the most efficient way, the best way. That's discipline. And so parents, not just simply fathers, mothers, coaches do this as well. Teachers do this as well. Push people to their limits so that they will become better. And so that's what God was doing with the Israelis. And so you shall keep the commandments of he who is your God by walking in his ways and by fearing him. For he who is your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains and springs flowing out of the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity. So it's wonderful. In which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless he who is your God for the good land he has given you. So God, through Moses, says, trust me, do what I say, so that you can get my blessings.